Okay, we're going to resume our Acts class. We are on the second missionary journey. You know, Paul's traveled up through here. He has left Athens, and he's now down here in Corinth. He met Priscilla and Aquila there. He stayed with them and worked together as tent makers. And then Silas and Timothy have now joined him. You know, he left them behind up here in Berea. It appears they never got to him when he was in Athens, but he has now joined them in Corinth. And we were in chapter 18, verse 6, which I'll read now. But when they opposed him and blasphemed, he shook his garments and said to them, "Your blood be upon your own heads. I am clean. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles." We talked about the fact that, you know, he shook his garments, similar to what Jesus told the disciples, that when they won't hear you, shake off the dust of your feet and leave that city and go on to somebody else. I thought it was interesting. He says, "I am clean." I think what he's referring to there is the same thing that he mentioned in Acts 20, verses 26 and 27. "Therefore, I testify to you this day that I am innocent of the blood of all men, for I have not shunned to declare to you the whole counsel of God." So I think he's saying that he's innocent from the charge anybody could levy against him, that he did not tell the whole counsel, that he did not do all he could to share the gospel and to teach people. So, you know, we need to have that same confidence in our lives, that we've done our part to speak to people about the gospel. We've done our part to be an example, to teach our children, etc. So we want to be able to say that as well when we have to defend ourselves. Okay, I'm going to read now verses 7 through 11, chapter 18. "And he departed from there and entered the house of a certain man named Justus, one who worshipped God, whose house was next door to the synagogue. Then Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord with all his household. And many of the Corinthians, hearing, believed and were baptized. Now the Lord spoke to Paul in the night by a vision, 'Do not be afraid, but speak, and do not keep silent. For I am with you, and no one will attack you to hurt you, for I have many people in this city.' And he continued there a year and 6 months, teaching the word of God among them." So back in verse 7, we see that Paul is no longer teaching in the synagogue. He's now begins to meet and teach people in the home of Justus. In some manuscripts, he's called Titus Justus, which is a Roman name. It's not clear if this is the same Titus that will join Paul later. In 2 Corinthians 2:13, he mentions him. "I had no rest in my spirit because I did not find Titus my brother, but taking my leave of them, I departed from Macedonia." So it's not clear if this is the same Titus or not. Of course, he also wrote a letter to Titus that we have in the Bible. Then on to verse 8. Talks about Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue. So it's encouraging here that a ruler of the synagogue has believed the gospel. And Paul mentions him in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 when he's talking about who has followed, you know, who is people naming themselves after Paul, etc. He says, "I thank God that I baptized none of you except Crispus and Gaius." So again, it's good that this ruler of the synagogue has obeyed the gospel. It says that many of the Corinthians also, hearing, believed, and were baptized, which is obviously the same way that we understand the gospel. We hear it, and we have to believe in it. We have to make application of it and accept it and to be baptized. Now, do we hear of another ruler of the synagogue in this chapter? And who is that? Verse 17 talks about Sosthenes. So it's not clear if he is a replacement of Crispus at the same synagogue, or perhaps there's more than one synagogue in Corinth. So he's the leader of that synagogue, possibly. But now, before we go into verse 9 and 10, this is where Christ speaks to him. Can you try to get an understanding of why the Lord may have given Paul this encouragement here in verses 9 and 10? Can you think of some of the opposition that Paul has either witnessed or that he's been had to endure in his missionary journeys? What oppositions has Paul had to face? Okay, yeah, he was beaten before. Right, he's fled a city by night. Okay. Okay. Right, he was stoned. He was put in prison. Even in his first, when he first became a Christian, how did the Jews respond to him that, you know, in Jerusalem? They didn't want to have anything to do with him. They didn't trust him. So, you know, just even starting out, he had that. Okay, he saw James, he witnessed the fact that James was killed by the sword. Peter was put in prison. As was mentioned, the Jews in Antioch sent him out of the city. The Jews from Thessalonica followed him to Berea and harassed him there. He didn't have that great of success here in Athens, which he just left, so I think he had plenty of reason to be discouraged, plenty of reason to feel that maybe he wasn't being effective, that, you know, how much good am I doing type of thing. So we hear Jesus here speaking to him and encouraging him in the gospel. He explicitly tells him that he will not be attacked or hurt while laboring in Corinth. So I'm sure that was a great encouragement to him, that he was not going to be in fear of his life, that he could freely speak to people, that he could freely go where he wanted and not be in fear. So this idea of encouraging others, how can we make application of this in our lives? Okay, very good. Yeah, it's easier to know how to encourage somebody if you know more about them, if you know what they're struggling with, if you know maybe more of their background, if you know what's going on in their day-to-day lives or their family or their job, etc. And you learn about that through conversation, through getting to know them. And that's a big part of it is allowing that to take place, allowing people to sharing with them your troubles or your struggles, your challenges, your tragedies, whatever. And also being willing to step forward and to enter those uncomfortable situations to help other people. I know many years ago I had a tragedy in my life, and there were many Christians that stepped up and helped me, and it was very encouraging and very helpful. There was a family that brought me over to their home, and, you know, I would eat dinner with them, or I'd go with them and their children to events and things. Some of the people my age invited me to events and social gatherings and things and encouraged me. There was a couple people at services, they would come up and not just say hi. They would look me in the eye and say, "How are you doing?" You know, they wanted to know, and they were interested in me. So that made a big difference. So I just encourage us to look to encourage others. You know, those that are teaching your children in class, you know, have you encouraged them in their efforts? You know, Zane here preaching, have you encouraged him in his efforts? There's lots of opportunity to encourage others and to receive that as well. Yeah, very good point. That I think that is a tool of the devil, that you would feel isolated, that you feel like you're alone and that you should give up. So, good point. Yeah, very good point. The fact that, you know, who would think Paul would need encouragement, this person that's out preaching and traveling? Good point. Okay. All right, so in verse 11, it says here, he continued there a year and 6 months, and teaching the word of God among them. So We don't know if this is added to the time that he already spent in Athens, and then we're going to, down here in the later verse, we're going to talk about some more time that it says he spent there. So it could have been, this is not total time that he spent there in Corinth, but at least he spent that much. And it's believed that he may have written 1st and 2nd Thessalonians while he was in Corinth at this time. Okay, yes, yeah, it was a long-term effort, and he put a lot of effort into it. So, as this shows, we're on the second missionary journey, and it's thought that he wrote 1st and 2nd Thessalonians while he was in Corinth. And this is the time frame, the years that he was on that journey. And this chart is similar to it. Again, second journey. He probably wrote 1st and 2nd Thessalonians while in Corinth. And these are some of the churches that he established on that journey. Philippi, Berea, Thessalonica, and Corinth. Okay, let's read verses 12 through 17. When Gallio was proconsul of Achaia, the Jews with one accord rose up against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat, saying, "This fellow persuades men to worship God contrary to the law." And when Paul was about to open his mouth, Gallio said to the Jews, "If it were a matter of wrongdoing or wicked crimes, O Jews, there would be reason why I would bear with you. But if it is a question of words and names and your own law, look to it yourselves, for I do not want to be a judge of such matters." And he drove them from the judgment seat. Then all the Greeks took Sosthenes, the ruler of the synagogue, and beat him before the judgment seat. But Gallio took no notice of these things. So again, the Jews stir up trouble, bring him to Gallio's judgment seat. This Gallio was the proconsul of Achaia, and there's an inscription found at Delphi that shows he was proconsul in the year 51 AD. So that's just a little historical evidence there that when he was proconsul, and it, you know, agrees with that chart we showed with the time frame that Paul was in Corinth here. So it says he was at the judgment seat. Sometimes they had a judgment seat set up in the marketplace where this occurred, or sometimes they even had a movable judgment seat, so it's not clear which one it was. Then they brought this charge against Paul. What was the charge? Okay, that he was persuading men to worship contrary to the law. Now, since they went to Gallio, this Roman person, it could have been that they were saying, you know, Roman law allows the Jews to worship, you know, to worship as we have been. They allow us that freedom. So I don't know if the people were saying he's breaking Roman law because he's worshiping another way that you haven't allowed. This is a new way. Or if they were just saying we don't like the fact that he's not following, you know, Judaism strictly. That he's talking about this Jesus and resurrection and these new things. But anyway, that's what charge they brought before him. Now Gallio, cut Paul off here. I guess Paul was ready to defend himself, it says, as he always was. So what was Gallio's response? Right, he said, "It's not a matter of Roman law." He says, "It's a matter of your words, your names, your own law." So I'm sure it had to do with, you know, they're talking about whether it's who this Jesus is and whether there's a resurrection and etc. So he did not want to be bothered with their Jewish religion or this Christian religion, because it wasn't a deal, a concern from the Roman law point of view. And I noticed one thing I was going to point out in 1 Corinthians 6, you know, Paul talks about a brother taking another brother to law. Verse 1, he says, "Dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to law before the unrighteous and not before the saints?" So this is basically what the Jews were doing. Instead of dealing with this themselves in their own venue, they went to the civil courts of the day and, you know, they threw him out. They didn't want to hear it. And we could read all of it, but I'll just drop down to verse 7. "Now therefore, it is already an utter failure for you that you go to law against one another. Why do you not rather accept wrong? Why do you not rather let yourselves be cheated? Now, in verse 16, it says that he drove them out. So the case was dismissed, so the court was cleared. Whether there was, this was a forceful release of the court or not, it's not known. So now we see in verse 17, it says the Greeks took Sosthenes, the ruler of the synagogue. So it's not clear, the Jews are the ones that accused him, and now it says the Greeks turned their rage on Sosthenes. And there's no real explanation of that, why they chose him or why they wanted to bring this violence against him. And also, 1 Corinthians 1:1, a Sosthenes is mentioned. He was helping Paul with this letter to the Corinthians. Paul, called to be an apostle of Jesus Christ through the will of God, and Sosthenes, our brother. So we don't know if that's the same one or not, but it's interesting that the same name is mentioned there. Okay, so they try to bring this charge against Paul to get him in trouble with the Romans. They were interested in it, so the case was thrown out. Yeah. And as you say, Gallio didn't bother with them if they're going to beat up Sosthenes, their own ruler of the synagogue. He let them do that, but he wouldn't let them put him to death. That would not be within Roman law. Okay? So let's read verses 18 through 22. So Paul still remained a good while. Then he took leave of the brethren and sailed for Syria, and Priscilla and Aquila were with him. He had his hair cut off at Cenchrea, for he had taken a vow. And he came to Ephesus and left them there, but he himself entered the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. When they asked him to stay at a longer time with them, he did not consent, but took leave of them, saying, I must by all means keep this coming feast in Jerusalem, but I will return again to you, God willing. And he sailed from Ephesus. And when he had landed at Caesarea and gone up and greeted the church, he went down to Antioch. Okay, so he sails he goes to Caesarea, and then he's going to sail to Ephesus, and then he's going to go down here to Caesarea, and go down to Jerusalem, and then back to Antioch. So this was a very heavily traveled route because it connected commerce from Asia to commerce in Europe. So this was a very well-traveled route, and there was a lot of ships that would go back and forth from this. And it typically took about a 3-day journey on the ship if the weather was good. So Paul here, it says he remained a good while. So this possibly was past that 1.5 years that we were talking about earlier. And he wants to go back to Jerusalem. So he goes to Cenchrea, and so Cenchrea is right down here from Corinth. And he traveled across to Ephesus. Now, Ephesus is not there today. They ended up, the harbor silted up, and so they abandoned that city. And so it's not there anymore. Now, this is the present-day map. So this, in the old days, this was called Smyrna. Remember the church in Smyrna, one of the letters in one of the 7 churches in Asia that were mentioned in Revelation. But now that is called Izmir, and this is all Turkey. And I forgot to mention that Berea is now called Berea right there. And Cenchrea is called Kechries, K-E-C-H-R-I-E-S. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that's what it's called. Just a little info there that might help you understand what's going on. So there's really no explanation of the vow or why he had a vow. Sometimes the Jews would make a vow for past blessings. Sometimes they would make a vow asking for future blessings. Again, it's not indicated what it was about, so we don't know what it was for. There is a church that was established in Cenchrea. It's mentioned in Romans chapter 16, verse 1. So it's likely that when Paul was in Corinth during that, you know, 1.5+ years that he traveled down here, because it's only like 10 miles away, so he probably traveled there while he was in Corinth and established a church at that time. So in verse 19 it says, they sailed to Ephesus. It's the capital of this area of Asia. There's a temple to the goddess of Artemis there. So what's unusual about this visit to the synagogue that we see in verse 20? That we haven't seen in the past visits. Okay, stay longer, they said. Usually they're throwing him out, right? They're running him out. But maybe he just hadn't been there long enough for the Jews that didn't like his preaching or his message to decide to take action. But this time they said, you know, stay a while. But he wanted to go to the feast in Jerusalem. It was likely that would have been Pentecost. But he says, I will return if the Lord wills, which is a, you know, expression that we're encouraged by James to use today. James chapter 4, verses 13 through 15. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city. Spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. So, you know, we need to make sure we include the fact that God is in charge, and we don't know what tomorrow brings, and that, you know, everything is at His will. It was also a common expression among the early Christians. I have like 6 verses written down here. We won't read them all, but Romans, 1 Corinthians, Hebrews all mention the fact that people would say, if the Lord wills, you know, I will do this. This is my plan, if the Lord wills. So verse 22, it said, or 21, he sails from Ephesus and he ends up down here in Caesarea. Which, of course, that city exists today. That's the Roman capital of Judea. And that would have been about a 1-month journey to go that distance at that time. And from there, it says he went up to Jerusalem because it's up in elevation. So he likely gave a history or a account of his journey to the church there. And then from there, he goes to Antioch in Syria. So this is the end of the second missionary journey. It was about a 3-year endeavor. He covered large areas of Asia. He went into Europe, which was different than the first missionary journey where he stayed in Asia. This time he crosses over and goes through Europe, and several churches are established there. You know, as we said, he ran into a lot of opposition. The Jews opposed him in many places. He was stoned, he was imprisoned, etc. But there were churches that were established. So thinking about these missionary journeys and kind of what we mentioned earlier is, I think we should consider our role in missionary journeys. Not that we're necessarily going to travel somewhere and do something, but we can all set a goal to, you know, maybe you think about certain people, somebody at work, somebody at school, somebody in your neighborhood, somebody in your family that needs to hear the gospel, or needs to be influenced. You know, think about how you can influence them and, you know, carry out your own missionary work, because all of us are missionaries. We're all sent, a person that is sent to teach, or a person that should be teaching others. So we can all do that in our lives. Okay, so now we'll start on the third missionary journey. So it's going to originate here in Antioch. The first verse here we read that Paul is going to travel up through this area, and then we'll kind of have a little side note where we talk about Ephesus, where Apollos is at, while Paul is on this journey here. So in chapter 18, verse 23, after he, that's Paul, had spent some time there in Antioch, he departed and went over the region of Galatia and Phrygia in order, strengthening disciples. So it says that he's on this path right here. And now we're going to turn to verses 24. So let me read verse 24 to 28. Now a certain Jew named Apollos, born at Alexandria, an eloquent man and mighty in the scriptures, came to Ephesus. This man had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he spoke and taught accurately the things of the Lord, though he knew only the baptism of John. So he began to speak boldly in the synagogue. When Aquila and Priscilla heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. And when he desired to cross to Achaia, the brethren wrote, exhorting the disciples to receive him. When he arrived, he greatly helped those who had believed through grace. For he vigorously refuted the Jews publicly, showing from the scriptures that Jesus is the Christ. So who are we introduced to here? Okay, Apollos. It says he was born in Alexandria. That's a city in Egypt near the Nile River. It was known for its learning. It had what they considered the greatest library in the world at that time. How's he described? Okay, eloquent, meaning he's learned. It says he's also mighty in the scriptures, which I thought was a great attribute. You know, that's a characteristics that each of us should ascribe to, because knowing the scriptures well helps you in your daily life, helps you raising your children, helps you in all the things that come at you each day. So that's a very good characteristics that we should also seek to have in our lives. So he probably had stores of learning, and he probably was able to speak well and use that in service to God. So Apollos says that he came to Ephesus. This was apparently, as I said, you know, we think Paul's on this journey here, and then during that time, Apollos comes to Ephesus. So Paul had already left there. So it's likely that Apollos wasn't taught by Paul. Perhaps he was taught by, we know we're going to read, he was taught more accurately by Aquila and Priscilla here. What did Paul say about Apollos in 1 Corinthians? Yeah, he says, 1 Corinthians 3:6, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. That's right. So, he's talking about the fact that, you know, people were putting too much stock in Paul and saying, well, I'm a Paul, you know, I follow Paul. And he's pointing out that, you know, he's just one person and everybody is involved, and you shouldn't follow me, you should be following Christ, was his argument. So he does mention that Apollos helped the people in Corinth after Paul established the church there. Apollos is going to go there and help the people even more, as we're going to read about and talk about here in a few verses. Right. Yeah, sometimes we can put too much emphasis on, you know, who the preacher is or who said this, when we should be focusing on the Word and on Christ and not giving those people too much importance. Okay. So verse 25 here, we see that it says he had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and it says he spoke and taught accurately the things of the Lord, though he knew only the baptism of John. So apparently he hadn't been taught all there was to know about Christ. And Aquila and Priscilla were willing to help him, which is a good example to us, because, again, they saw the need. They decided, we're going to speak up. We're going to help this person to know more about Christ so that he can do his job better, so he can know what the full gospel is. And it's very impressive to me that here this learned, eloquent, mighty in the scriptures person was willing to listen to Aquila and Priscilla and take their input and, you know, expand his knowledge and know more about the gospel that made him a better servant. Good point. Yeah, they took him aside. They didn't do it in a public manner. Okay, good. And, you know, that can be applied today because, you know, a person could have been baptized as an infant, you know, which it's not because they heard and believed. It's just because that's what their family did. So that person would likely need to be baptized again or baptized for the remission of sins because now that they've heard and believed. So, you know, this same sort of thing can be applied today, that we need to, you know, be baptized for the right reason for what the gospel says. You know, and it says here that they wrote letters for Apollos. So they sent him, when he went to Corinth, he took along these letters, and that's mentioned in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 1. Do we begin again to commend ourselves, or do we need, as some others, epistles of commendation to you or letters of commendation from you? So maybe Paul was referring to that as well. I think we're out of time, so appreciate everybody's help in class today. We'll begin in verse 26 or 27, I guess, next week, chapter 18.